Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I'm here pushing the buttons, and across the internet is the guy who is the chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter. He's why you're here. It's Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I imagine you're doing better because you spent a lot of time in Austin, Texas, which is a wonderful place to be.
It's wonderful. It's hot.
It's insanely hot.
Mm-hmm. But it is actually a great place. I'm not sure if you know this, to get barbecue.
It is. I had some when I was there last month, and of both, and it is spectacularly good at that. Live music and great food, and yeah, it's a good place.
Yeah, I didn't see any live music. I probably should have, but I was there for the ATX Festival. Mm-hmm. Which was actually pretty busy doing that. That's like sort of the premier TV festival. People probably have heard of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I had a ton of tacos and queso and brisket and ribs and didn't do any yoga. So didn't do any actual exercise at all. So, you know, I need to get back on it, which now that I'm home, I've started to get back on it. And then it's also weird to sort of like be getting back in the mode of actually watching TV rather than being on stage and talking to people about TV.
Yeah, it takes when I went there, it was the same thing. It takes a little bit to shift gears. And I was doing my, you know, computer conference last week, and it was similarly, you get home and you're like tired. And then also it's just like, okay, how do I get back into the swing of things? So how was it? I got an email from somebody who said that they were very jealous about the fact that you were doing an Americans thing at ATX.
Yeah, I ended up doing three panels. You know, one of them was 20 years of Blown Deadline, which is David Simon and HBO. So all from The Wire to, you know, The Corner to The Deuce. There was so much great stuff to talk about there. And then I did kind of on the, you know, a series that I'm hugely, you know, supportive of and hoping other people will find out, which is the Get Shorty panel for Epics, and hope people will find that. But yeah, I think the big one obviously was the last day on Sunday, which was the Americans. And I really, really had a great time doing that because I had so many things to ask them about the finale, which I won't ruin because I know you haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
And a lot of people haven't, but it was just, it was great to get, you know, they were still a little bit hesitant to sort of talk about, because the ambiguity is great, and they want a lot of stuff to still be ambiguous. But I think I was able to sort of push into certain areas and have them talk about maybe what it meant, some of these things, but also, you know, what did you want out of this scene? And we were able to sort of deconstruct much of the finale, and it was just a great time. I really loved it.
Yeah, I'm one of these years I'm gonna go. I in fact, as you were talking, I put it on my calendar for next year.
Uh-huh.
The question is always when Apple does their developer conference and if the timing can work. It looks like my daughter's graduation from high school is going to be the following week from ATX. So it's that question of like, could I slide it in there? And it depends on kind of like what Apple does, I think. But I really want to go because I love Austin, and the idea of going to a big television festival seems like so much fun. So maybe next year. I keep saying that every year, but maybe next year we'll do it.
Yeah, that is a fun one. I'm going to have my daughter graduate from high school as well, so I need to make sure the dates line up.
But yeah, that's the trick, yeah. Right? That's the trick. Hopefully, yeah. it will line up, because otherwise, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But hopefully
yeah.
That'll all work. Well, I'm glad you got to do that. It looked like a great time. David Simon and the Americans, like, good time. Pretty
yeah.
good. Pretty
Those
good.
Those are good ones. Yeah. And then it was a little too short for the Get Shorty panel, I thought, but it was good to see that people were turned up and out for that. They also showed, they ended up showing the second episode of the new season, and it's really good. And it's some very, very fun. There's a very, very funny scene in the second episode. That, you know, it really creative, and they were able to mine it several times for good laughs. And I was just happy to talk to those people, especially Lydia Porto, who is she's the mob leader and just a wonderful actress. And her role is like unlike anything on TV. And I know we're going to talk briefly in a minute about Moon Boy. So I should say that Chris O'Dowd, who is the star of Moon Boy and one of my favorite actors, and also is, the lead actor on Get Shorty, I've never met him, so it was fun to meet him at ATX and get a, you know, he's like 6'3", so to get this gigantic hug from this big Irish guy, for, you know, supporting Moon Boy, and just, we've never met before, so it was funny that, you know, we've talked on Twitter, but, to have it cross paths in Austin, it was nice.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. I just saw him for The Incomparable. We're watching all the Marvel movies for this summer, and he's in Thor 2, which I had totally forgotten.
I didn't know that either.
It's a comedy bit where he's on a date with Natalie Portman, and she's, you know, distracted by thinking dreamy thoughts about Thor, basically. And poor, you know, he has to be the kind of date she's ignoring, but he gets a couple of funny scenes.
He's very, very good.
Very funny guy. Absolutely. Sure. Let's talk about some other stuff that's going on.
Sure.
You mentioned Moon Boy. Do you want to talk about that more? Are you going to do a series of these hidden gems stories about, like, just pulling out shows that nobody has seen that are still sitting right there for people to watch?
Yeah, and it's going to be a recurring series. This was the second. The first one, I put Detectorists and Back and The A-Word, three of my, I think, prime examples of hidden gems in there. But in some ways, I almost probably should have reversed it, because Moon Boy came before all three of those, even The Detectorists. And it was sort of the ultimate story of how I found something. And certainly that was back in 2013. And certainly now, so much more important to discover these, like, hidden gems, as we say. But I think also what I'm trying to do, Jason, is, like, they could be hidden, but they could also just be undiscovered. I haven't seen a lot of stuff. I was just today going through some things about international series that I just, like, never heard of. And then they're like, it's the third season of whatever. And I was like, okay, literally have never seen that title, like, even mentioned. And it's like, it's a thrilling British series, or, you know, and I'm like, wow. So it's just, you know, there's so much, even for people who were paid to sort of, like, try to at least stay on top of the American stuff. There's so many great international stuff. And I was with Joe Weisberg, was, in fact, I've already forgotten the title, but Joe Weisberg of The Americans, when we were standing backstage about to go on, we were talking about Moon Boy, and he said, oh, have you ever seen, I've forgotten already, this Israeli series that I'd never heard of. He's like, oh, you have to, like, include it. It's so great. So, you know, everybody, people in the business too. And he's like, I just sort of discovered it, but it was just laying right there. And that's kind of the spirit of why I'm doing it.
That's great. I think it's a great, we talked about this, like, last year, this idea of, you were thinking about, like, what does criticism, TV criticism mean in this new age? And I've really liked seeing your kind of thoughts kind of spin out into actions, where you're bringing back the power rankings, but you're also doing these, stories like this, where your job as a critic is not just to measure everything that, or your percentage of everything that comes down on the conveyor belt, right? You're trying to take a bigger picture in terms of trends, but you're also, you know, why not highlight things that people may have missed? Because, like, in the immortal words of the NBC promotions department, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. But it's true. I mean, those were selling your reruns, but, you know, it's just true. This stuff just sits out there. It's all available on demand. Literally everything on Netflix is a click away. So, and other streaming services too. So why not do it? So it's kind of fascinating to see you taking these different cracks at it, because if nobody's seen Moon Boy, then, you know, it's a chance for you to uplift that thing. Just because it's not something that came out in 2018 doesn't necessarily mean that it shouldn't be at the top of somebody's list.
And it totally hasn't aged at all. It was already a coming of age story in the west part of Ireland, set in 1989, so it's already a sort of a nostalgic throwback that hasn't, there's not going to be, like, references that are like Trump references or something that would be dated. And it's as magnificent now as it was then. So people should definitely go, all three seasons of, I think there's six episodes each, are on Hulu. It goes really quickly. It's really endearing. And I think sometimes, you know, also, like you said, we can point out things that are, like, really endearing, like Moon Boy, or, you know, not just, like, really funny shows like Back that people will totally miss, but endearing shows like The A-Word, which people just they haven't found yet on Sundance Channel, or even, like, The Detectorists, because I brought that up I think I mentioned to you that, and you've already seen all the Detectorists. Like, we live this, you know, you just went to this computer thing. You're turning out all these reviews. You're doing all these podcasts. You live a very harried life. Your kids are graduating. A show that you can point out to somebody saying, hey, if you feel this way, like you're totally stressed, hey, why don't you watch Detectorists? And it'll calm you down a little bit. And it'll also just give you a peek into a world you don't really see on TV that much.
Great. It's great. Fantastic. We should mention that, I guess, officially Emmy season has started. You and Dan are working on something. I've seen a bunch of talk on Twitter about, like, various For Your Consideration things going on. I've noticed, because I followed some of the counterpart Twitter accounts, that there's definitely somebody on there who has now officially been tasked with ginning up. Well, the Twitter account is relaying stories, but there's clearly somebody at Starz, for example, who is like taking advantage of the fact that they're shooting the second season in LA in studio. And so they've got Justin Marks and they've got J.K. Simmons. And so they're like carting them out for different interviews in different places. And it's very clearly an Emmy campaign. And that's just one that I noticed, but it's like, it's fascinating to see that marketing machinery kind of whir begin to kind of hum louder as we get to that point where the Emmy stuff is starting to heat up.
Yeah, you can. Another one that's really evident is Amazon touting The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and it's like they're putting so much money into that campaign. I mean, I think that what they're trying to do is get the show noticed, of course, and promote Rachel Brosnahan. She's a slam dunk to get nominated for lead actress in a comedy, especially that there's going to be so many openings in that category this year. But there's still an outside chance, but it's something that a campaign that large that maybe, you know, that's a series that gets a first time nomination in the comedy field. Dan and I have been going back and forth. We've been focusing on best drama series, best comedy series, and limited series, and then mentioning the actors in each of those.
A bunch of the best dramas are like not eligible from last year, are like not eligible this year. So there's a real opening there for some interesting shows to slide in.
Yeah, same for comedy. You know, it's Veep is not in the comedy category, and neither is Aziz Ansari's series.
Oh, Master of None.
Master of None. So there's openings. There's you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus not being, you know, she's what, won it 1,000 times in a row.
Yep.
So her not being there opens up stuff.
The statue is literally just a statue of Julia Louis-Dreyfus now.
That's right. They're just going to hand it out. That is great. There's some opportunities. Again, as Dan and I go back and forth, I'm lamenting my, you know, now at least 3-year-old argument that it doesn't make any sense in 2018 in the peak TV era for the Television Academy not to have 10 entries per category. It's if you did that, then I just don't understand. It's just such a no-brainer to me. And they've expanded to 7 in some categories. So what is holding them up for 10 in all categories? Dan and I had literally no problem picking more than 10 for any of these categories.
Yeah. Yeah, no, makes sense. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for Counterpart, because I feel like that was the best new drama and one of the best. And I hope, and people don't know about it. So, right. That's the thing. Like, get people to be like, what is this show that got nominated? That would be great.
But absolutely. I mean, the trouble there, because I'm with you, and I'm a huge proponent of, and I know that Sundance is not pushing the A word, but right. Counterpart's been like my number one show, like new show for sure. The problem when you get them in, when I would love for it to get nominated, but this year I definitely want the Americans to win. So
right.
It's like, that's kind of a double-edged sword there.
Yeah, that's true. That's okay. You know, just go for a nomination for one and a winner for winner for the other if we need to do that. Had a funny thing that I noticed. So Deadline.com wrote a story that this is funny because Jennifer Salk, who's the new head of Amazon Studios, mm-hmm. and she gave interviews with everybody. Yes. She had like a little interview tour, which, speaking of kind of having the PR machinery crank up, mm-hmm. little interview tour talking about what she's going to be doing, how they're working at Amazon Studios. Good stuff. Sounds like some, you know, real adult supervision has come in. They've got a talented team, she says. She's got, I thought it was interesting, like the way that it's laid out, which I assume a lot of studios are like this, where, you know, they've got people in charge of like genre programming and young adult programming and comedy and like people, executives who are really drilled down into those areas, and they're developing shows there. It's all really interesting. But one of the angles that she did talk about was saving The Expanse, which they did, and mm-hmm. Considering other shows that didn't make it somewhere else. And she talked about a Norman Lear pilot that she was interested in. She talked about Lucifer and how her international people, especially the UK, were looking at that like they might actually pick that one up from, was that Fox, I want to say?
Mm-hmm.
So that was still sort of like out there. That I think the fact that she was talking about it as a possibility is fascinating, just openly saying, well, you know, we're looking at it because the international seemed to be really high on it. And she talked about The Expanse a little bit and what went into that. And that was fascinating for me. And Deadline did one interview, but like in true web journalism fashion, broke it up into several different stories. And,
yes.
and they did a story about Expanse and Lucifer and all of that. And what I thought fascinating about it was you get to see inside the mind of a TV executive who, like, and a movie executive, she's, you know, they do both. You know, it's true for them what's true for you, which is there's too much and you can't see mm-hmm. it all. And so she hadn't seen The Expanse. She didn't know anything about it. And she started to hear from people about it. And I want to quote this part because it's fascinating. She says, really smart people whose opinions I value creatively started reaching out to me saying, have you seen The Expanse? It's actually great. I hadn't. So I spent some time. I watched the show and I was like, this show is actually really well done. Why is nobody watching it? Which it's really funny, but I like the admission there too of like, I don't know. I mean, I got the sense from her kind of like, yeah, I'm not going to watch a sci-fi space show. It's not going to happen. But then people said, watch it. And she did. And she's like, oh, she was taken by surprise, which is a good thing to do. Take a head of a studio that might save your show by surprise by liking the show. But this next part gave me a real kick. She said, at the same time, Jeff Bezos was getting emails from everyone from George R. R. Martin to every captain of industry, like the founder of Craigslist. And they were all writing saying, there's this show. It's so great. You have to see it. You have to buy it or save it. Now, the founder of Craigslist is Craig Newmark, who listens to this podcast.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that just made me laugh and laugh. It's like everything is connected in some way. And I sent a screenshot of this story to Craig Newmark on Twitter. And he was like, where's that from? I did write to Jeff Bezos regarding The Expanse. Maybe he noticed. And he said, I just sent thanks via a couple of high-level folks at the Washington Post. So it's like, it's there's the TVTM is very lightly inserted in part of this virtuous circle that leads to the Expanse being saved.
Oh, yeah, Craig, he's been a long-time listener, and yeah. He's also, you know, he's also been following on Twitter and supporting, you know, happy about, as a Bay Area guy, happy about all the stuff that we've done and certainly yeah. the TV reviews and stuff. He's really super nice. So, yeah. Titan of industry.
But I had that, yeah, I had that minute when I'm like, wait a second.
Craig, yeah.
So, because of that, so I guess it goes from Craig to Jeff Bezos to the head of Amazon Studios. That's how that works. Anyway, they saved it, which is great. I got another letter from somebody who it made me laugh. This is from Clive in the +44, because where else would Clive be from, quite frankly?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who said, who wanted to castigate me about the fact that I said that there were 10 episodes in The Expanse, when in fact there are 13 episodes, so there are still many more episodes left to air. I got confused by the fact that their first season order, and this was a bad sign when the first season order was just 10 from Sci-Fi mm-hmm. Channel, but they did pick up the second season for 13. The third season is 13. We still don't know any details about what Amazon's pickup is, and is it for one season, and how many episodes in it? Who knows? But hopefully it will be at least a 13 episode season, and I'm looking forward to it. But thank you for the pedantry, Clive from the +44. Yes, there are even more episodes of The Expanse out there, and then who knows what will happen once it is, as Clive said, consigned to the black hole of oblivion that is Amazon Prime Video. It's
wow.
going to be a recurring bit here.
That is dark. See, I don't support that, but
no,
I don't either. I will say this though: I think that your point about Jennifer Salkin, like, not like saying, I never heard of it. I like that she came up And admitted that that's important to do that because, you know, I know these ones that have come from the broadcast side, they have not seen these shows.
Sure. And that's the truth is it's not we have reached a point where you can't be ashamed of it because literally nobody can see all this stuff. There's no way. So she said, I hadn't heard about it. I watched it. I said, oh, this is great. Why is this not getting more buzz? Because she might have actually watched it if it got more buzz. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. So I thought that was really good. Her interviews were all really good. I think their business is fascinating. And we joke about the black hole of oblivion of Amazon, but I read a story about the AT&T purchase of Time Warner that got approved this week, which was approved by a judge who basically said, it's fine, just do whatever. Like, literally, there were no rules or anything. Just do whatever. You've got it. Which is going to make the Disney and Comcast vying for Fox thing fascinating. When that happens, I think next week, that's going to start playing out. So there's a lot going on there. But one of the things that I saw in the coverage was a chart of the size of all these companies and a question, and there was a big piece somewhere, I can't even remember where, about Netflix and the dominance of Netflix. And I thought to myself, well, you know, the fact is, you're still going to have big players. Netflix is not going to eat the world. Instead, you're going to have Netflix and other big players are going to rise to meet it. And that probably is Amazon. And it might be a Hulu that is buttressed by either Disney or potentially Comcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're going to have big players. So Netflix may seem like the only game in town now. It did get a head start. But I feel like in the end, it's not going to be that different from the old days where there were three places where there was programming. You know, there will be lots of niche players, but, you know, it's not going to be like there's Netflix and then there's the rest of the world. There are going to be some other big companies who are going to make them just going to spend money and they're going to make themselves big players in this. And so we can joke about it, but I think it's depending on what happens with Hulu and if they have an international rollout plan and how they get invested by whoever their owner is. Like, I still feel like Amazon is going to be a solid competitor to Netflix when all is said and done, even though, yeah, they just had a huge changeover too. I think you'll see it. I think in the next few years, you're going to see Amazon be a solid competitor to Netflix in people's minds and not just sort of on paper.
Yeah, I mean, because there's certainly a couple things in play. The Lucifer story is interesting because of the international part. And it's such a good reminder that the only other international, because Hulu's not international, that the only other international player right now is Amazon, and that they are going to like be looking to strengthen their international catalog and increase subscribers throughout the world, but also to sort of say, okay, yeah, we get it. We have a lot of stuff, and they definitely have struggles on the user interface front, and just people knowing about it. It was the black hole joke there, but you know, the fact that they want to pick up shows that are going to be on their bench for international consumption, or just if you like, say you live in America and you want to see more of Lucifer, it'll be there. That is the future. And, you know, I think Disney getting Hulu, that's got a future internationally. And I think I'm about to do something pretty soon. It's about, I hate to say it, but like, I don't know how you and I have been talking about this for a long time. Like, I am looking at my watch thinking like, what is Apple going to buy? Because,
oh man,
there is no back catalog for them right now. And I'm mystified about that.
Yeah, it is a real question. There is stuff floating out there. There is stuff out there. I wondered about like Sony. Like if Sony, would sell its entertainment property off, if Apple would just snap that up or something like that, because a lot of this stuff is getting absorbed by the giants, and Apple wants to be out there, and Apple's got the money. Like, Apple's totally got the money to build it. We've talked about that again and again, but is Apple's entire offering going to be originals that they've bought themselves and funded and produced? Now, that, I mean, I wouldn't put it past them because it sounds like a very Apple thing to do, but it does seem like at some point, and their executives came from Sony, like, and Sony's one of the larger things that's out there that remains that is not kind of part of a gigantic entertainment conglomerate. But I don't know, because, you know, the game seems to be changing, and it's unclear whether Apple can just kind of soldier on by themselves. They've got the cash, right? But they don't have their own studio. That's part of it. I don't know. There's never been a more fascinating time, I think, to be an observer of the world of television. Like, there's so many different aspects of it right now, and it's all to play for. It's all up in the air. These giant companies. I don't love the idea that everything's going to get swallowed by three or four giant companies, but certainly it's interesting to watch how technology changes have driven all of these different business changes.
Yeah, and you know, for the longest time, when Viacom was just sitting there, Apple was linked to Viacom for a really long time. Like that's what I had heard from people in the industry, that if they could pick off Viacom, they would. But with, you know, CBS and trying to merge Viacom, and whether that works or not, but that's where the early talks were. But they need a back catalog.
Apple could buy CBS and Viacom both if it really wanted to, right? I think the real question is, what is Apple's long-term strategy? And do they look at properties like this and think, you know, we don't want a broadcast TV network. Like, we literally don't want that.
Yeah,
so, you might like some of the stuff that they've got, or you might like some of the stuff. They probably don't want cable channels, and Viacom has cable channels too. That's why I keep coming back to Sony, because Sony doesn't have a lot in terms of assets that are like linear TV. They have, you know, movie studio and TV production and some streaming stuff that's tied in with PlayStation, but they don't have they don't have a lot of channels like CBS and Viacom do. It's fascinating. I don't know. It's Apple is fascinating because they're the like agent of chaos roaming in this landscape. It's like, what are they up to? We don't know.
It does make sense. I mean, you get an immediate back catalog, and it seems like that they got a no from Viacom for years, and then that now is much more muddy now that CBS and Viacom are doing this weird thing. But that would be good. It's got to happen. I just keep looking at my watch and tapping it.
Yep. When will it happen? Well, do you want to do some letters?
Yeah, let's do that.
Here, this is from Lee in the +44. Boy, so international. That's because of the simultaneous release. Well, like Amazon and Netflix, Tim, we are also focused on international.
we are the Netflix of podcasting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
Let's use that as an ad.
In the +44, I found the anti-altered carbon for my latest transatlantic flight, The Good Place. No sudden nudity, but lots and lots of sudden laugh out loud moments.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sepinwall finally got Mike Schur on the record about what happens at the end of the second season as one of his first acts at Rolling Stone. People should check that out if they want to know. Like, there's a lot of speculation about what happens at the end of the second season of Good Place. And Mike Schur, there's all these theories about, like, well, what does this really mean? And where is the setting, and where is it going to be in season three? And Mike Schur is like, you know, I'd like to, like, keep this a secret and stuff, but no, it's not all the wild theories are all wrong. It's like, kind of refreshing to just get that. Like,
yeah.
No, it's literally what we showed. It's not a weird switch them up. It's literally what we showed. Like, all right. Okay, that's just what he wants you to think, the conspiracy theorist will say, because that's what they do. Anyway, thank you, Lee. The Good Place, great show to watch in any place, but safe for airplanes, I think we could say.
It's safe for airplanes. Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, let's see. Tom K. wrote in and said... and I thought this was a really good point. He said, I heard this, the middle is the better working class comedy, so why do Roseanne a few times now? And I agree, just because there's one working class show doesn't mean there shouldn't be more. After all, saying there's already one black show, so why make more sounds an awful lot like Roseanne Barr. And I agree with this, but I think the point was more like, Roseanne was being sold as, finally, there is a show about the working class, and that was false, because there already was a show about the working class, middle class people, called The Middle. So that was more the lie was that it was something that was not seen on TV before.
That something was up. And that also ignores by the fact that Shameless has been on for, I don't know, seven seasons, and that's totally... Lower middle class.
The bigger points, right? Like, one of the challenges, I always thought about this when I was watching Friends and Seinfeld back in the day. It was like, boy, NBC, you really got the wealthy young professionals in New York City demographic locked down, and then there's everybody else in the country. So having more diverse perspectives, I mean, one of the things you get when you have more diverse creators and writers and producers is you get more perspectives, and then not every show is about the exact same person who is literally like the product of an Ivy League education and then worked in a writer's room and then
been too much of that
so
already.
point taken there for sure. Minda in the 503 wrote in to say, this is emphasizing something that that came up last time. Yes to Brockmire on IFC. It's so good. You guys should give it a try. Half hour episodes packed with so much life, career, outlook, relationships, but at the same time, not too dense. It's about baseball and podcasting both, which means we should probably watch it is what I'm saying, Tim. So
we should.
Thank you, Minda.
Yeah, thank you, Minda. They were also the Brockmire people, I think, for the second year in a row were at ATX. I wasn't at that panel, but I believe Dan was or someone was. But that's like, so I'll get to it.
It's on my radar now. Yeah, apparently he has. It is about podcasting, and it's a baseball play-by-play guy. And it's like, yeah, it probably is right up my alley. I will say the promos I saw were not good. So
sometimes that's a hurtful thing.
Yeah. Well, I think they were targeted. The promos I see for Brockmire, because they were on cable during like baseball playoffs and things like that, and they were like, "We're gonna make a promo for all the dudes who watch sports," and they kind of turned me off with the tone. So maybe I will give it a chance now. All right, here we have one last letter, and it is from data scientist Dimitri of the 415.
Nice area code of record.
Formerly of the +44 and the +30.
Oh my God! What is the +30? Do we even know what that is? Is that space?
It could be.
Final frontier.
Greece. It says Greece is +30.
I wouldn't have picked Greece, but okay.
Dimitri.
Yes. Well, you know what? Now it does make some more.
Now it does make more sense, right? It all comes. Anyway, this.
I am my own data analyst.
You are a data scientist of letters and area codes. Right. Here we go. This is a really good letter. It says, I present for your consideration the following candidates for your hidden gems introduction.
Oh, okay.
Said, I was the only one who had ever heard of the Detectorists here in the U.S. I'm not sure if you've reviewed any of these smaller UK shows. So he's using his +44 knowledge here. And I'm working my way back through podcast to find out. But in case you have not, here are his suggestions. Would I Lie to You, starring the great David Mitchell as one of the team captains. The British have a great tradition of these panel comedy shows. Season 1, Episode 6 had me laughing so hard I was crying and snorting. It's on BritBox.
Okay.
Happy Valley on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Huge Happy Valley fan.
All right. Yeah. Suspense. Never Has a Police Procedural had us on the edge of our seats with anxiety, fear, and worry, and wanting more. And because it's set in the North, we really needed the subtitles. Awesome. +44 internecine humor going on right there. And he says, no room for relentless exposition like American TV shows. Pay attention or you'll miss the action. I like that. That's one of the shows you can't fold laundry during. You got to watch it. Plebes on Hulu.
Some, I heard of that,
some
but
country
I haven't
boys
seen it. Mm-hmm.
Come to the big city, Rome, to find adventure and fortune and are immediately out of their depth. A sitcom set in an extremely well-researched ancient capital city clerk's office, renewed for a fourth season after a long break. So that's interesting.
Look at Hulu.
That. Borderline on Netflix. Sweet, soft-spoken comedy. A one-season mockumentary following the daily office life of customs agents in a remote northern English airport.
Wow. Okay. Again.
Interesting. I'll put these in the show notes so people can find them.
Yeah.
And so you can find them. People Just Do Nothing on Netflix. A mockumentary crew follows Isleworth's pirate radio station, Corrupt FM's DJs, as they try to impress the camera crew while oblivious to their own failings. I do like the mockumentaries.
That does sound a whole lot like The Office, but okay.
Drama World, Netflix. A young American obsessed with watching formulaic Korean soap operas at work finds herself trapped in the middle of one after slipping and falling on her head. The episodes are 18 to 22 minutes long, and it was super bingeable. Anyway, wow. Sincerely okay. yours, data scientist Dimitri of the 415.
Dimitri, that was a very valuable letter. Thank you for that. I'm always looking for stuff to put on the hidden gems. And in fact, because of he's ran all those off, and one of them was talking, I think, about Canada. But I want to bring back the fact that one of my favorite totally Canadian new series, Letterkenny, is coming to Hulu. So the first two seasons of Letterkenny, there's a third already done in Canada, but it's going to be available in Hulu. I'm not sure when. And I tweeted out like a picture. I have a Letterkenny. I was such a huge fan. They actually sent me a hockey jersey with my name on the back, which my daughter wears all the time now.
Awesome. So if you would like to have your letter read on the TV Talk Machine, you should email us at podcast@tvtalkmachine.com or send us a tweet at TVTM. So easy to type and so much room in tweets to send us a tweet. And those are the best ways to get to us here. And then we'll read your letter next week. Now, next week we'll be back. You're not going anywhere, right?
I am not going anywhere.
All right. I'm not going anywhere next week. After that, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to be traveling for a couple of weeks, so maybe we'll miss a couple of weeks, or maybe we'll try to do a quick like double bank next week. I don't know. Maybe David J. Lohr will appear from the woods in Indiana and with the Great Rail Splitter or something like that, and do a special episode with you. I don't know
from
what's going to happen there. Just so people know that we might miss another couple of weeks at some point, but we're working on it. We're here for you, internationally, of course, simultaneous release internationally, worldwide, because we, like Amazon and Netflix, take the international market seriously, as seriously as we take anything else on this podcast. All right, Tim, it's been a pleasure as always. I missed you last week. I'm glad we were back to this, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Jason, and happy return to podcasting for everybody else.
Yes, indeed. We're back. People were so sad that we went away, but now we're back, and now we're going to go away again. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye-bye.